for a while I kind of was like, well, death is death, maybe it's the same guy, but I'm like, Death and Adventure Time is like, he's a real bummer, right? Like, where Death and Regular Show is, he is more fun. And so I was like, oh, okay, yeah, like they'll be cousins. And like, they don't really, like, if I'd ever been offered to write a spin-off on Death, I would have loved to write one about like their family dynamics and how Regular Show Death is like, oh my God, like Adventure Time Death is, sure, he's like way more accomplished. He's killed way more people. Yeah, sure, he was responsible for a whole bunch of plagues, but like, he's kind of a dink, you know? Like, he's so full of himself. And like, that actually, Death and Regular Show is kind of a good hang if you could get past the death part of it all.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Regular Show Wiki's 15th anniversary interviews. Today's guest is a comic writer who penned the long-awaited crossover comic with Adventure Time, as well as the 2018 special. Please welcome Connor McCreary.
Hey, everybody. So happy to be here. It's, wow, 15 years. I was shocked when you reached out, Jordan, and that it was that much time. You made me feel old.
I mean, and I don't want to make you feel any older, but I'm 23.
Oh.
So I was 8 when Regular Show started.
You didn't want to make me feel any older, and yet you somehow managed. All right, Jordan, I see how this interview's gonna go.
We'll just start from the very beginning. How did you first get into the career of being a comic book writer?
Oh, sure. I'm from Canada. I grew up in Toronto, and so I had, I guess when I was a kid, I used to actually, people always ask me like, oh, when did you start doing comics? And it was actually, I always think of it as a bit later in my life. It was sort of like a second career. But really, when I was a kid, I used to write and draw all these like bizarre wrestling comics that I would do in my classes. And it was all about me and my friends helping this super student wrestle all the teachers who we gave alter egos to. So one of our teachers turned into a dinosaur. Somebody else was a rhino. Our English teacher and our gym teacher were married, and we just turned them both into just giant mops of hair that were nonverbal, which we thought was funny because one of them was the English teacher. And so I think we probably did like 100 of those at least when I was younger. And so I'd always liked the medium. And when I was a kid, I used to love, you know, I love reading comics. And then I think like a lot of people my age, which is older than Jordan, I was kind of taught like, you know, you get to a certain age and you got to stop reading comics, right? Like it's not, it's, you know, it's for kids. And so I ended up working as a journalist. I worked in film and television in Canada. And I had an idea with a friend of mine, Anthony Delcol. We created a comic series called Kill Shakespeare. But first we thought we'd do it as like a movie or a TV show. And it wasn't until we kind of dipped back into what was going on in comics that I suddenly realized how many sophisticated comics were out there and that I didn't have to give up the medium. I mean, I could still enjoy all the stuff I loved as a kid. But that also kind of speaks to Regular Show, which I always look at a little bit in my mind as something like The Simpsons in the sense of it works on so many levels. Like there are so many jokes in Regular Show and really Regular Show. You know, I always think of it with Adventure Time because I worked on those projects together. You know, where Regular Show is really kind of it's the sarcastic, like sassy teenager who's like kind of coming out of the room for dinner, but only sometimes, compared to like, you know, say Adventure Time, it's much more like preteen who's just kind of happy to be there. And so, yeah, you know, I started by doing this Kill Shakespeare, and then that got me opportunities to work with things like Assassin's Creed. And on a Holmes versus Houdini book. And then that actually eventually led me to Boom, where the opportunity to work on Regular Show popped up.
So how did that kind of come along? Because your first contribution with Regular Show was the crossover with Adventure Time. How did that kind of come along? How was that? Because I can remember when that was announced. Regular Show had only recently just finished on TV. So it was really crazy hearing that, oh, it's coming back in comic form and it's an Adventure Time crossover, the thing that everyone was kind of waiting the whole of the show for. So how did that come along?
I mean, so that came. So Shannon Waters was the editor I was working with at Boom at the time, and we had been trying to find we'd had a project that almost went, and then at the last second, for a couple of different reasons, it fell apart. And we'd always been looking for stuff to work on, and it was funny because most of the things that I had spoken to Shannon about that we were looking at were much more serious kind of work, for lack of a better term. But we always had really very fun conversations where we would laugh and laugh. And so she kind of reached out to me out of the blue and was like, look, I don't know if you do this, but like, I think you're really funny. And we need someone to work on this crossover comic. And I was thinking you could be a really good fit for it. And what Shannon hadn't known was that all the stuff I had done in film and TV before had been kids' TV stuff. So I created a kids' television show, again with my buddy Anthony, that was optioned and was in development in Canada and then didn't get made. I wrote a screenplay for a feature animated film that got funded but didn't get made. And so I'd had this kind of almost previous life working much more madcap, kind of crazy stuff. And so it really appealed to me that that was a part of me that I hadn't really. Except for like in scenes with like Falstaff and Kill Shakespeare, who's always very silly, I hadn't really had a chance to like engage that part of my brain, and so I think I said yes without really 100% fully understanding, like you're saying, the level of fan interest and expectation for the idea of these two worlds crossing over. Like it seemed kind of obvious to me because obviously they do feel like kindred spirits, those two shows, but I don't think I quite understood sort of. You know, I would at first it came to me as more of a, oh, what a fun idea, as opposed to knowing, you know, I wasn't extremely online in the regular show Adventure Time world, so I didn't really understand how many fans were like, you know, had kind of shipped this relationship already. And I think if I had, it probably would have felt more intimidating because there would have been I would have been aware of so many expectations that people had had for a crossover.
And the comic itself is great. It's exactly what you'd want from an Adventure Time regular show crossover. How was it though, kind of balancing? Because you mentioned earlier that both shows are kind of similar, but they're also different. How was it kind of balancing the humor and the feel of both shows within one shared comic?
Well, I mean, I think that's so some of that was, I guess, kind of looking at the structure of like, how do you put this together? And I mean, so one of the things, I mean, I actually, it's funny, I found it the other day. I had a notebook where I just started going through as much of the like, you know, okay, well, what did I know about Adventure Time and regular show? Like, when I just thought about episodes I'd watched, things I liked, what was there automatically, right? And then it started getting into, and it was more, actually, I'd seen more Adventure Time than I had regular show. Regular show, I was not as familiar with, ironically. And so, but you know, the more I looked into it, the more episodes I started watching, and like, what are the touchstones? I kind of sat there and was like, okay, you know, regular show is just a bit more mature in every way, right? I feel like the emotional relationships in regular show are a little more complicated and a little more complex than what's in Adventure Time. Adventure Time, I think both shows have a really big heart, which is what I love about both of them, right? That they really are about friendship. And I always do look at Adventure Time as kind of like the carefree friendship you might have had in like your late tween, early teenage years. And then regular show starts being like, oh, like high school and like early university. And like you're dealing with just a more complicated world, you know, like Mordecai has a job, right? Like, you know, that's why in the book, one of the big things I wanted to use was to pull back what I thought was one of the big, most interesting conflicts that Mordecai and Rigby had had, which was this idea of Mordecai going to school. And like, that's a very grown-up idea of like leaving and going away in a way that Adventure Time doesn't deal with it, that kind of thing, in quite the same way. And so I think the, you know, having, you know, it was important to me early on, this idea of like, you know, what do you do if you're, you know, basically you're doing a superhero crossover story. Well, what does a superhero crossover story have to do? You have to see the two teams unite. And of course, because of super, you know, comics logic, they have to fight, right? And then how do you get out of that? And so I remember one of the complaints about the book was like, oh, like it's just like every superhero crossover story. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of the point. Like you need to give somebody what they want, but hopefully you start recognizing the twists that I'm putting into it, but that regular show and Adventure Time demand. But yeah, it was really the ability to kind of chop up the characters and have them go on separate adventures within one big adventure. That was a structural choice I used so that I could kind of have, okay, well, this is going to have a regular show feel, you know, in it. And like the Adventure Time characters are going to adapt to the regular show energy. And then this one is going to be the opposite. We're going to have Mordecai adapting to how the princesses are, you know, and sort of, and it gave Mordecai, especially, who I thought is kind of the emotional center of this book, it gave him the opportunity to figure out what he wanted to be next as a character. And so it was important to me that there was some ability for them to change a little bit in the story.
You could definitely feel, as you mentioned, the shift in maturity between the two franchises within the comic, because both Finn and Jake and Mordecai and Rigby have conflict with each other at some point within the comic. But Finn and Jake, they tend to get their issues resolved fairly quickly compared to how it happens with Mordecai and Rigby. Rigby spends almost the whole comic being like, "No, I don't care, you betrayed me." And then, "Wait, maybe I can do this to rub it in your face." And you definitely feel a big difference between the two franchises, and it just works so well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I thought like one way that I kind of illustrated, which was a bit of the story that was maybe a cheat, because I look back at the story not too long ago when you first reached out to me. But it also does feel like it fits a bit. It's the idea of like there's a part of the story, you know, for those who haven't read the book, the idea is that there's been this kind of pull between the two worlds, but there's a curse. This master of division is cursing Adventure Time, and the master of division can both literally divide things, so he can make you smaller, but he can also figuratively divide people. So friends become enemies, which of course is such a, you know, it's a classic trope. And so of course I wanted Rigby and Mordecai to have that. But the great thing about Rigby, because he's all id, is he doesn't need a curse to feel slighted or to like, you know, be like, oh, like you're my enemy now, right? Like he's very loyal, but he's like very selfish and very like hair trigger. He's like such a fun character to write. And I, you know, I'm trying to remember where I was going with this, but the opportunity to give Rigby a chance to really have to like look at himself, because that's one thing he doesn't do a ton of, where like you said in Adventure Time, Finn and Jake, there's more, weirdly enough, there's a bit more introspection, where Rigby doesn't have a lot of that. And it was an opportunity for me to give to let Finn and Jake's more, you know, basically unshakable friendship serve as a bit of a maturing point for Rigby in his relationship with Mordecai. And so yeah, it was fun to get to kind of play those things off of each other, but also just to let Rigby just be like totally like, oh yeah, like, you know, you have other friends. Well, I'm gonna show you how much better I am. Because of course that would be Rigby's ultimate, you know, that is his ultimate fears. He's gonna lose Mordecai.
And a big thing that the comic actually ties into is the regular show movie where Mordecai names one of the biggest betrayals Rigby's done as being Mordecai's rejection letter. And it's always great within the comics, because I love the comics separately to the show, but it's always great when they do have that tie as well. And there's other things in it, like you've got the hammer and the Destroyer of Worlds in the 8-bit. In the video game world, there was, I mean, the big connecting thing that like they're looking for is the power. So I thought it
Yes.
was great having all those references. And another interesting thing that I love that comes out of the comic is the insinuation that Death from regular show is cousins with Death from Adventure Time.
Yeah, that was just like I was, you know, went in there and I was just like, oh, that would be like, because they are such, you know, they are very fun characters. And for a while I kind of was like, well, Death is Death. Maybe it's the same guy. But I'm like, Death in Adventure Time is like, he's a real bummer. Right? Like where Death and regular show is, he is more fun. And so I was like, oh, okay, yeah, like they'll be cousins. And like they don't really like, if I'd ever been offered to write a spin-off on Death, I would have loved to write one about like their family dynamics and how regular show Death is like, oh my God, like Adventure Time Death is sure, he's like way more accomplished. He's killed way more people. Yeah, sure, he was responsible for a whole bunch of plagues, but like he's kind of a dink. You know, like he's so full of himself, and like that actually Death in regular show is kind of a good hang if you could get past the death part of it all. Which is why, yeah, that was one of my funniest, most the things I enjoyed the most was getting to write, was putting Death in there, and the fact that everybody was okay with it. Because of course with these things there is still a little bit of like, even though regular show was just coming, had just come to an end, and Adventure Time, I think it had ended. I can't remember if Adventure Time was in their last season or if they'd been over for a year or something. I can't remember now. So there wasn't too much of this, like, oh, you can't do this because in the future we need this character or this. Like, I had a lot of freedom, but even still, you're never quite sure which of your weirdo ideas are going to be like the right wavelength for, you know, Pendleton and the whole team, or which are going to be No, you can't do it. And so I was really happy when they were like, "Oh yeah, death has a swimming pool." Like, sure, why not? Let's see death at his swimming pool.
Another thing that I noticed as well is this comic is maybe ironically the most we really ever get to see the character of Celia. In the show, she has a few appearances, but she's not really ever essential to the plot. Whereas in this, we get to see like a whole new side to her.
When you're doing something like this, I feel like you are still a bit constrained by, like, Mordecai's Mordecai, Rigby's Rigby. Like, you can play with these characters a little bit. And so one thing for me that I wanted to be able to do, and I've always, I guess I love this in, like, the big picture term of, like, superhero comics, is when somebody takes what you would say is like a B or a C level hero and then comes up with a really fun, rich adventure, right? And it's six episodes, and you're like, oh man, I never thought I was going to read something about Stilt Man. But like, whoa, this Stilt Man fighting the insurance industry is like, got me right here kind of thing. And so Celia was somebody who, often I guess there was a bit of that notion to me of like, oh, the girlfriend trope where they don't really get fleshed out. And there were little bits and pieces, like the idea that she had been an EDM like DJ, like there were little bits and pieces that were strung out throughout the show where you're like, okay, so there is a bit of character here. And yeah, and so I wanted to build that up, and I wanted to have a character that I could do something with and really just do something new with. Like, that would, for me as a writer, that's satisfying. Mordecai and Rigby and everybody, I hope what I did with them and with Finn and Jake is feels fresh and doesn't feel like an adventure you've seen a thousand times before, but still it's going to be within a certain scope of what those characters are. So Celia really gave me an opportunity to make somebody who's a bit tangential and to give her a bit of a starring role and to let her be like, I guess in the canon of regular show, like this book is kind of the defining picture of who she is as a character, right? Because she hasn't been explored that much. And so that tickled me. And just also High Five Ghost is like such a fun character. And I wanted to have a chance to like dive into what it like to dive into that side of him, because you don't really get to see him as a partner, right? Like he's such a quirky character. So I wanted to kind of be like, let's see something that really matters to him, and let's see him as a boyfriend, which was, kind of fun for me.
Because the comic starts off with Adventure Time, with the Adventure Time universe, and then it jumps over to regular show, and instantly it's got like one of my favorite jokes in the whole comic, where Mordecai is saying to Benson, "Oh, what happened to Thomas?" And then Benson's like, "Oh, nothing, nothing unholy."
Yeah, poor Thomas. Also, another character. I originally wanted to have Thomas to have a bigger role in that book, and there was just no space for it. But yeah, no, and I know, and for that, like, I wanted to start with Adventure Time because, like, that's where that's where a big bad was, and I felt like Adventure Time was a better universe for a big bad because Adventure Time has a bit more in the ways of big bads, and so this idea of somebody who is trying to destroy, divide everybody and take over, that felt very Adventure Timey. And that, Princess, and then having, Princess Bubblegum, it made sense to me because she's your science tech, she's the both somehow the heroine and the person in the chair, that like she would find a way to send our heroes for help. And like you said, the power was one where, when I was looking through, I'd forgotten that episode. I don't think I actually watched regular show at the beginning, so that was a new actual experience for me, like the power and this wizard and like how like it's like this ultimate power that it just kind of gets like tossed, like it's like so many things in regular show it's never really mentioned again. And so that seemed like a very fun Easter egg for people who are big fans of the show, but also was just so easy to explain that, like, oh, it's a power. And it's like, it's, you know, like, so if you knew this backstory, hopefully it was very satisfying. But if not, it still made sense. And yeah, and poor Thomas. Yeah, that was that, but yeah, that was also one of my favorite little, like, little jokes as well. There's just such fun characters because so they all have such totally different viewpoints on things. And there's a lot of opportunity to have fun with the humor of the dissonance of all these characters.
You just said that there was some stuff that you wanted to do a bit more with Thomas. Was there anything else that you wanted to maybe explore in the comic that you didn't get the chance to?
I mean, I wanted to do on the Adventure Time thing with Ice King, I wanted to do a little bit more. Like, that's the other thing we kind of spend a bit of time is with Ice King and his history and trying to find out what happened. Like we know his connection with like what happened before the world was destroyed. And I really liked him and Marceline have a really nice relationship, which you see every once in a while on the show. If I'd had space, I think I would have wanted to spend a bit more time with Ice King, kind of, like you get it. I think it works in the book, but in a perfect world, I would have had more time to really spend with like the emotional impact of like wondering if maybe somehow this crazy adventure had brought you home, and to make those stakes a little bit more. Like it ended up with Marceline, it worked with her being like, look, if you want to stay here, I understand. But it would have been nicer to maybe have been able to put more on that. So for it to have been more of maybe a temptation for Marceline as well. But there's only so many pages in the book kind of thing.
So you've been writing comics for 20 years. What is your writing process like, and has it adapted over that time?
Oh yes, for sure, for sure. I have a film and TV background, so I did always have a little bit of the idea of like, oh, you're going to write your outline and your treatment and kind of this very structure focused way of doing things. So when I do get something, so like for regular show Adventure Time regular show, that book specifically, it was like a lot of research, and then I was trying to figure out like what I thought the big arc was going to be. And then I try to figure out like your cliffhangers, right? What are your if this is going to be a 5-issue book, like what are your 5 big cliffhangers, right? Really 4, because your fifth one is your resolution. And then I also try to have a good sense of where like emotionally I kind of want a character to go. And that kind of guides me. Like it became obvious early on for me that the most interesting emotional journey was going to be for Mordecai and Rigby, for me at least, because their conflicts are so rooted in real life, right? Again, this idea of university, which really struck me the same way as this idea of like, wow, like your friend betrayed you, like that's really heavy stuff. And so when I realized that, I was like, okay, so that means Finn and Jake's thing is going to be more of an obstacle, and that means they're going to serve as the agent of change. It's their relationship that's going to let Mordecai and Rigby are going to be able to view that and see what that kind of friendship can look like. So to further strengthen their own friendship, and like I have a, I the parts, some of the parts I like best in the book are the kind of the mushy bits, right? The parts where like Mordecai and Rigby are able to get honest with each other about how they feel and how Rigby is able to get really honest with himself about how he's kind of, not even just that he's jealous of Mordecai, but he just kind of thinks Mordecai is better than him. And he doesn't really know what to do with that. And that's where so much of his like insecurity comes from. And for me, like the part of the story that moves me is this idea of like, oh, poor Rigby, right? Like Rigby's not really a jerk. He just kind of sometimes he's just trying so hard to prove himself. And it's like that's what drives all of Rigby's worst impulses. And so yeah, once I kind of had that idea nailed down, then I do a fairly, depending on the job, sometimes you really need to do a really specific outline to get a job. So for something like this, I had to have a pretty tight structure to bring to Boom, to take to everybody at Cartoon Network, so they really could see what I was going to do, because I didn't have a previous relationship with Cartoon Network, certainly, and even with Boom, it was more of an informal relationship. So that one, yeah, was more structured. But for other things, like I have another series I do with Boom called The Last Witch, and that was when I sold to them just on a paragraph. It's like, oh, it's going to be the story of this young girl. She's going to learn how to use magic because witches destroy her village, and it's her grandmother and her little brother, and she has to stop these witches from opening a door. And they were like, oh, that sounds really like awesome. Like, we'd love to hear more. And I didn't have any more at the time, so I had a weekend where I just like tried to figure it all out, and then on Monday we had a meeting. But for regular show and Adventure Time, like I really had to figure out, okay, what's going to happen here? Where are we going to go? And I think I needed that for this, because there's just so many places, like there's so many possible locations and characters that you could put in here, that I really needed to kind of figure out what the story was. So it was like, oh, death makes sense. Like it should be death, and it should be Adventure Time or regular show death and not Adventure Time death. So yeah, I would say it varies, but I am a big, big fan. I do recommend when I teach writing seminars to do some sort of beat sheet. So that way, when you start a story, you can actually get to the end of your story without getting lost in the minutiae of trying to write it. And I think there's something actually magical and really important that happens when you write the end in any format of your story, because you now for the first time you know what your story is, and it makes it, in my mind, way easier to go back through and to start figuring out all the rich details that make it such, it's going to make your story fun and exciting. But sometimes you get caught in the fun and exciting, and all of a sudden you get lost and you don't know if your story makes sense anymore, and you're not sure what's going to happen next. And a beat sheet where you just write like 5 or 6 words, 10 words for each idea you have, and you don't have to worry about anything more than just the idea, is a really useful way to keep your creative juices rolling, to not get crashed on the rocks of like specificity, which is of course so important. For an actual story is to be specific in every moment. But when you're first coming up with something, it can just kill you.
So we'll move on to the other comic, which you have done for regular show,
Yes.
the 2018 special. So this is a unique comic in the way that hopefully this doesn't blend into the background, but in the way that everything is. So that's. Is that the first chapter? Yeah, that's the first chapter. And
Yes.
then you scroll it around like that. Was that your idea initially going in, or was it something that Boom wanted to do, or?
So in the if you in Adventure Time versus Regular Show, there is that section where the two worlds come together for the first time, and it's like one's on the top and one's on the bottom, and you could read them in alternate, or you could read them one after another. And I tried to like make it work both ways. But originally what I'd wanted to do for that was this idea. So what you're showing there is the idea is that each corner is like a different part of the story. So you would read only the top left corner each time. So you'd read all the way to the end of the book, and then you would turn the book, and then you would read it again. And then you would turn the book and read it again. And originally I'd wanted to do that for Adventure Time Regular Show, because there's this time vortex that pulls them through, and I thought that would be like really cool, like it was going to be for like one, I don't even know if it was going to be for a full issue. I think it was going to be for a full issue. Anyways, while the people at Boom and Cartoon Network were like, oh well, that's so cool, they were also like not in this book. They're for a bunch of different reasons. So it was funny because they came up to me. And I'd had this very specific idea for why I want to use this structure. I just thought it'd be, and I thought I like that. I like when comics do different things and you're like, oh, I'm reading this comic differently. So then they came up to me and they're like, oh, everybody really liked your work on this. We need someone to do the annual. And you know what? I know you love that idea of like doing something so we turn the book around. So let's do that. And I was like, yeah, sure. And I was like, I have no idea what the story is going to be. Like, I had this very specific idea why I want to use that mechanic, like I said, to mimic the idea of going down a vortex. And because we were going to have four different characters at that point, we're going to have point of views in this meeting of the two worlds. So I was like, oh, shoot, I don't know what the heck is this going to be. And then that's how I don't remember where the idea of Apollyon came from. But yes, the idea of like having basically them adopting a hellhound, and then just this hellhound who wants to steal their souls. And as the more I thought, I was like, oh, each chapter of the like of a dog going from puppyhood to the end of its life can be told in each of these four little stories. And I was like, oh, and it will be more effective instead of, I could have just told one story and then you turn and now we jump time. But I was like, oh, it actually could work really nicely for using this idea because, I don't know if they think this is a little too tall forehead, but like there's a piece of me that's like, oh, when you're dealing with death, you're always kind of aware of it coming, especially as you get older. And so I was like, oh, there's even a part of like when you look at the page and you're just looking at this corner, but you, of course, can see the other three panels on the page. You're not blind to them. And so it's almost like you can kind of see the future death of this dog. I mean, really, it's about a story of your pet dying, which is really quite a sad story, and I feel like many people can relate to having an animal and having to say goodbye. But yeah, that it just got dressed up in this idea of this like dog that they happened to adopt was a hellhound and wanted their souls. And then the more it got to know Mordecai and Rigby, the more it started wondering, do I really want their souls? Like, do I want to give up this whole hellhound thing? And also, this choice of choosing to remain mortal. which saves Mordecai and Rigby. So it's a, I don't know whether it works as well as I wanted it to, but there's certainly some thought behind it.
Well, I definitely remember when I read it for the first time, and when you get to the scene where Apollyon does die, I was like, are they actually doing this? Like, we're killing off a dog in regular show? But I absolutely love the line of dialogue. I can't remember either Mordecai or Rigby say it, on how, like, we've only had for 4 weeks, and she's aged. So do you remember where kind of that idea came from of rapidly aging?
Yeah, I guess it was, I mean, I guess really that was, I needed something there because, I mean, first of all, just kind of, it felt like just a funny, it felt like a very regular show, right? Of course, something's gonna be super weird about this dog, and it's gonna be something that's like very obviously is weird. But a lot of it was like at first, the original idea I'd had was like, oh, it's like them going through the life of their dog. But I was like, well, that's a problem because dogs live like 13 years, right? And like, regular show doesn't move through time like that. So I was like, oh crap, I love this idea, but like it doesn't work if the dog dies in actual 4 weeks because then it's still a puppy and that's way too depressing, right? Like it's one thing, like you said, this, the story is, it's sad. It is a bit of a sad story, but I think there's something about the idea of being able to say goodbye and the sacrifice that this dog makes to not give away too much for people who may want to track this book down. Is while it's sad, I still think it's ultimately like a, again, I think there's a lot of love in the story. And I think it's something that, hopefully someone can sit with and be like, oh, that was sad, but it wasn't like nihilistic or anything. It was actually kind of hopeful and beautiful in a little way, in its little way. So yeah, basically that really just came from the fact that I was like, this dog has to go through its full life cycle for the impact of the story to be there. But it's gotta be really quick because Mordecai and Rigby aren't gonna age 13 years in this comic. Like it's just not going to work. So I briefly toyed with the idea of jumping through their periods of life as well. So like it could have been like, I briefly thought about the idea that they could have passed on the dog between each other and you would have seen Rigby and Mordecai grow apart like 5 years later, 8 years later, 12. But that just ended up being, there was so much context that would have had to have been put in, and I'm sure it probably could have been done, but it just, I was just like, you know what, let's keep it simple. And also deadlines, right? Like there was a time frame where this book had to get done.
You've written for a large number of regular show characters just across these two stories, but who would you say was your absolute favorite character to write for?
I mean, it's probably Rigby, right? Just because Rigby, like Rigby is, I put them in the classic character. I mentioned this Kill Shakespeare book I did, which where we use Falstaff. Like I love those characters who could just, they have no real, they don't edit themselves. And so at any moment they could do anything. And so yeah, Rigby's just all in, right? Like he's not a bad guy in by any stretch of the imagination. He's a wonderful friend, but he could do literally anything at any time. And that's fun, right? Because that's like the best part of that is when you have a bizarre, weirdo idea that makes you chuckle, you're like, oh, I can give it to this character. Like, this character will totally do this at the drop of a hat. I don't even really have to explain why, Ruby's going to start ham boning, right? Like, of course, he feels like ham boning is the way to solve this problem, So that, from that part is really, really satisfying. I really like doing High Five Ghosts. Like the High Five Ghosts Celia thing was fun for me because I thought that was a really fun little relationship and got to show a side of those characters you don't see a ton. And I know I'm cheating because I'm naming like so many, but also like it was Mordecai's fault. Really fun to write for a different reason because he is more of the like parental figure for lack of a better term, but he's still super fun. But like he's a really fun character to work with. As someone who's like, who kind of understands the emotional stakes of the situation, the idea of him thinking about like, in this book again, the idea that he was going to go to school, there's, I do enjoy writing a character who has to face some sort of like, emotional crossroad and actually really weighs with it. Like Rigby's not really suited to do that part of the story, but yeah, if you told me gun to head, it'd be yeah. If you said you can only write one of these characters, you could only do a standalone for one. I think it would be Rigby, just because the sky's the limit with him. Plus, he's a raccoon, and I'm from Toronto, and raccoons are like our city's like that. They're our city's mascot. I'm a big raccoon guy. And, my dream is to one day domesticate a raccoon. My wife has so far said that that is a poor idea.
I love raccoons. They're my favorite animal. Unfortunately, we don't get them in the UK.
You're missing out, my friend.
I feel like a lot of people would say, "Oh, why are you saying unfortunately to that?" Because I know a lot of people see raccoons as nuisances, but I don't know. Just let them eat their trash.
But that's why they're amazing. Oh, they're so good. That's actually, it's funny. I'm working on a project now, like a fixed image comic. So because I'm not an artist, and it's two raccoons. It's called Life is Garbage, and it's two raccoons who just philosophize about the world because they just seem like the perfect characters. They know all our foibles and our we. They literally dig through our trash, Jordan. They know everything about us. You know, we have no secrets from the raccoons. Also, and they basically have opposable thumbs. So like, if anybody, like I once actually. Years ago, I once wrote a thing for a Simpsons, you know, before I realized the Simpsons didn't really take episodes. And it was about how dolphins and raccoons were going to come together as the evolutionary next step. Dolphins because they're so smart, and raccoons because they have opposable thumbs. And like, obviously, like, sure, you've got all the simians, but like, they're not going to help. They're doing their own thing. And so I was really mad years later when the Simpsons actually had an episode with like dolphins and special, like, water-breathing suits that had actually tried to take over the world, and all my friends were like, "Oh my gosh, the Simpsons stole your idea!" So yeah, I've had a long history with raccoons. So that's Rigby's probably got it from an emotional perspective, right then and there.
So outside of raccoons, and you mentioned earlier kind of having superhero comic crossovers being an inspiration for the crossover comic, what would you say are your main inspirations for behind the writing that you do for all the different types of comics, like outside of regular show and Adventure Time as well?
I mean, it really depends, right? Like, I mean, the Kill Shakespeare one is obviously me being like, you know, growing up in Southern Ontario, we had the Stratford Festival, which is probably the best North American Shakespeare festival going. And so I grew up with teachers who made Shakespeare super accessible and like made you think like, oh wow, Shakespeare's actually kind of superhero-y himself, right? It's like witches and monsters and like dirty jokes. And so I always kind of had a love for Shakespeare, but it really just kind of depends. Like the Last Witch series I'm doing. I'm Irish Canadian, and so I read a lot of Irish fairy tales when I was a kid. I was really interested in Irish mythology, and Irish mythology is kind of dark and a little bloody, and like it doesn't always work out well for the heroes. Like it is a very, you know, like a lot of European fairy tales, like the original fairy tales are actually quite dark, and Irish mythology is very dark and very, you know, there's probably all sorts of cultural reasons for that. So, you know, that would be influencing for that. I've just finished a book for HarperCollins, a graphic novel about a African musician named Fela Kuti, who's kind of like the Bob Marley of Africa. And so I dove deep into the music. But I mean, as a kid, I was a fantasy adventure nerd. I was into Dragonlance. I was a D&D kid. I love reading Robert Asprin and the myth books and all like the weird sci-fi or weird fantasy comedy. You know, I was a pretty nerdy kid in every facet, you know, and so I think those probably, if you scratch me, the real formative stuff is the grand epic type stuff, right? And so whenever I do a story, you know, even this Fela Kuti book, which is, you know, really it's meant to be a biography of this guy, but the artist, you know, and I working on it, we kind of turned it into a magic realism take. We brought in the Nigerian spirit world, and it ends up becoming quite a trippy take on this guy's life. And I think that's because, yeah, my formative stuff were these big grand adventures with flawed gods, and you know, I love the Belgarid, all those kind of books. So I think that's probably, I'm always a little attracted to the idea of an epic. That's probably why, you know, the regular show Adventure Time, you know, it was a pretty big in scale. It was meant to be a bit of this grand epic, but at the core, I'm also a big indie movie fan. Like 90s indie movies is kind of where I cut my teeth, and so these very small, closely observed stories, and there's so many of these like very tiny stories that I love. So I think for me, it's that combination of wanting to have a big like tapestry to play with, but then to make sure it's really about a very specific, hopefully very recognizable, you know, again, like Adventure Time regular show, you know, it's this world changing crazy stuff, and the master, well, the bad guy really just wants wants to rekindle a friendship that one of the Adventure Time guys doesn't even remember they had, which sucks to be, like, who hasn't been that person who's like been to a party and hit it off with somebody, opposite sex, same sex, doesn't matter. And then you run into them like a few weeks later and you're all like, hey man, what's up? And they're all like, oh, hey. And you're like, oh, I actually thought we were becoming friends. And you were just like, you were nice at that party. You were like, I don't think you were being disingenuous, but it meant a lot more to me than it did to you. And that's like humbling. So that's kind of the, what the villain is dealing with. And yeah, again, Mordecai and Rigby, it's just this idea of like being apart and, and like, how do you deal with that? And so, yeah, I think that is kind of the combo for me, epic with a very small, specific emotional core.
So Adventure Time has recently had a new revival with its comics with Oni Press. So there's been a lot of speculation online about whether this means regular show could potentially get a new set of comics from them as well. Essentially, if you were ever asked to come back and do a regular show comic, would you be interested? And what kind of stories would you want to tell without spoiling anything that could come up in the future?
Oh, for sure, for sure. Like writing a regular show is a lot of fun. I would 100% love to get to play in that sandbox again. I'd have to do some thinking though, I guess, is to turn it'd be interesting. I guess with a lot of these things, there is a bit of an idea of like how they want to reboot and sort of like the best reboots, I think, is once there's this idea of like, hey, we kind of have this specific vision for how we want to reboot this project. And so then for me, it would be one of the things I actually like doing is getting to play within somebody else's like set of rules. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, for me, having done a story that focused a lot on Mordecai and Rigby, I would probably be really interested in getting to do something that let me put some focus on some of like Muscle Man. Like I didn't get to do really anything with him in Adventure Time regular show. Like he's actually honestly like kind of vestigial as a character in that book. So he would be fun to do something with. But yeah, I don't know. I would, it's a great world. I'd have to do more thinking to really get a sense of like what would be the best story. I bet you if I dug up my old notebook, because it's been quite a while since I worked on that book, I had a whole bunch of other story ideas that I was going to pitch. So I bet you if I reread some of those, I'd be like, oh yeah. But right now, yeah, I'd have to say, you'll have to pay to find out your what, you'll have to buy the first issue.
Have you got any advice for people that want to make it into the industry?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think if like the best practical advice I can give is you want to have something that shows your work. And so I did not follow this advice in the sense that we started with Kill Shakespeare, which ended up being this 5-book series, and we're actually relaunching and bringing out new books. But try to find, if you're a writer, find someone who's an artist, ask them what they love to draw or what they've always wanted to draw, and then use that as the inspiration for a short story. Because A, it's a good test of your creativity, but B, it's going to kind of guarantee that this artist is going to draw this short story. Because one of the hardest things that happens is people get busy, real life intervenes. But if they've told you, for lack of a better term or idea, I've always had this weird image in my head of like somebody looking through a keyhole and seeing like a body, like somebody's in a big tub and their arm is out and there's blood everywhere. Right. I don't know. That's just my thing. I don't know what that story is. Great. You're the writer. Come up with that story. Or somebody's like, I love drawing dinosaurs and robots. Cool. Right. Like, find something that you can do with that. Because once you start having a few pieces that show your ability to write for the comics medium and that you understand that, like, at the end of every page, you need to have something that makes people want to look to the next page or turn the page. It's not just turn pages, it's every single page you want to have some sort of mini, mini cliffhanger, a question, really. Then it gets a lot easier because now you have something to show people. Because the dirty secret in the comics industry is, of course, finding, it's telling if an artist is good. Is much easier because they have their work and everybody's looking for artists because of course artists work more slowly because of the nature of what they do in the industry. So you always need more of them than you do of writers. So you really need to have you really do want to make yourself a little portfolio. And if you can work in different genres with different ideas, that's a really good way to go forward. And then the other thing I would say is if you're not somebody who's ever really familiar with what a beat sheet is, do yourself a favor, do some research. and the next project you're kind of kicking around, try using that beat sheet mechanic. I think for most writers out there, it will be a real godsend. It'll be a real eye-opener in terms of how a lot of the negative pressure of writing gets taken off your shoulders, and you can just focus on the fun part of brainstorming and coming up with cool ideas and writing it down, going back and changing it because you've come up with a better idea, but you haven't written a six-page scene that now doesn't make sense anymore. You've just written like two sentences. And like for example, in Kill Shakespeare, there's a scene where pirates attack, and I always tell people, we write the beat sheet of the pirates, and we say it's two friends go overboard, but we don't even say who they are because it didn't matter. It just mattered that Hamlet lost two friends. And then of course, as we did it, we're like, oh, well, it's going to be Rosencrantz and Guildenstern because that's who's in the actual play. But if we decided we didn't want it to be pirates and we wanted it to be like, I don't know, killer whales for some reason, like you're literally just deleting the word pirates and replacing it with killer whales. And if you decide it's not Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, you haven't written a whole big 10-page scene with all this great dialogue, and now you've fallen in love with it. And the part of your story brain that doesn't want to kill your darlings is like, no, I have to keep it. Well, you don't. But when it's a beat sheet, you're not attached yet. You're just serving the story. And then once you serve the story, then you get to do all the fun, fantastic things that make you chuckle or laugh or like, oh man, I can't wait until somebody reads this. They're going to be so grossed out. Whatever it is, So those would be my two big pieces of advice.
That's great. And as we're starting to wrap up now, I'd just like to ask, is there anything that you've been working on recently or anything that's coming up that you'd like to promote?
Sure, for sure. So, I mean, as I've mentioned a couple times, I do an all ages adventure series called The Last Witch. If you're a fan of things like The Dark Crystal or The Secret of Nim, or like Irish fairy tales that are kind of scary. The Last Witch book two is out there. It is an all ages book. If you love fantasy adventure, just as a, at any age, you can read it for sure. If you've got a young reader, kind of age 8 to 11, I promise you, this book is going, they're going to love this book. I have literally thousands of readers who have reached out to me whose kids like love this book. And yeah, it's basically about a young girl who learns she can use magic. And her brother, her bratty little brother, and her cigar-smoking grandmother have to stop this coven of witches from destroying the world. It's set in medieval Ireland, and it's kind of like Avatar: The Last Airbender with just the right amount of child cannibalism. Because if you got witches and no kids get eaten, how do you know they're really witches? And it's for kids. And the other one that's coming out this October is this book about Fela Kuti. Again, he is the Bob Marley of Africa. He did 60 albums, married 27 women. Was arrested 200 times and started his own country. Fela Kuti is just he's an absolute music legend. Miles Davis said he was the future of music, and he lived an incredible sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle while also fighting the Nigerian military government at every turn. He is just such a fascinating picture of a brilliant, driven musician who also was unafraid to speak power to truth, who is also deeply, deeply flawed, but very, very funny. And so that's a book that's going to come out with HarperCollins in the fall. And then, yeah, there's some more things, but they're a little farther off in the pipeline. And if anybody out there wants to follow me, you can always find me at The Real Connor on Instagram or Connor McCreary on Twitter. I'm also on Blue Sky, just starting there. But yeah, if there are any aspiring writers who want to ask a question, I can't promise I will respond right away, but I do respond to all those because people were really good to me when I started out, and so I'd love to try to help other writers as they're starting out as well.
That's great. Connor, thank you.
Thanks so much, Jordan. I really appreciate it.
Thank you once again to Connor McCreary for joining us for this interview. Once again, make sure to follow Connor on social media at The Real Connor and check out his new book, The Last Witch. All links will be available in the description. Next time, we'll be speaking with Benton Connor, regular show's longest running storyboard artist, boarding over 60 episodes across all 8 seasons. Here's a preview.
It was a good sign to see like merchandise come out of it, because that's when you know the show's doing well. Because like, sadly, like a lot of other shows didn't get that kind of like recognition on Cartoon Network. It was hard to like find a lot of like merchandise in certain places. And it just depended on like if the show was getting promoted or not. And sadly, Cartoon Network like was very like choosy with like how they like picked and like choose like chose like which shows to promote more. But yeah, regular show and Adventure Time, like we definitely. We got a lot of really good promotional stuff out of it, so that was good. Like billboards, it was really cool to see like billboards of the characters and everything. That's when I knew, like, okay, we're on the right track. We got a billboard finally.